All right, so get this. Today, we're going deep on this case that really flips the whole innocent until proven guilty idea on its head, especially when you're talking about the border.
Interesting.
It's the case of United States versus Montoya de Hernandez.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, a story about international travel, suspected smuggling, and a legal battle that goes all the way to the Supreme Court.
Classic. What's so fascinating about this case is how it really gets into the limits of the Fourth Amendment, you know?
Right, right.
Specifically that part about protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. I mean, we all know that's like super important, a cornerstone of our legal system and all that.
Yeah, for sure.
But when you're at the border, things get, well, a little murky, to say the least. And this case, it was decided back in 1985, but it still has a huge impact on how border searches are done even today.
Okay, so set the scene for us. Who was this Montoya de Hernandez and what got her into this whole legal mess?
Well, her name was Rosa Elvira Montoya de Hernandez, and she arrived at LAX from Bogota, Colombia. Right away, she caught the eye of customs officials.
Oh, how come?
Well, think about it. She had made a whole bunch of trips to the U.S., like in a really short time.
Oh, that's suspicious.
Yeah, and she had a suitcase full of cash, but no hotel reservations. And the story she gave about buying stuff for her husband's shop, well, it was full of holes, let's just say.
Okay, so red flags going up everywhere. What happened next? Did they search her bags?
Oh, yeah, they absolutely did. They even did a strip search, but didn't find a thing.
Wow, a strip search right off the bat.
Yeah, but they did notice she was wearing, get this, 2 pairs of elastic underwear with paper towels tucked in.
Paper towels, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? And that, on top of her acting super nervous, made them think she might be body packing, you know, smuggling drugs inside her body.
Okay, so they're suspicious, but they don't have any actual proof.
Right.
That seems kind of, I don't know, risky. What did they do then?
Well, they detained her. And I don't mean a quick pat down. This lasted almost 16 hours.
16 hours?
Yep. They gave her options, you know, go back to Colombia, consent to an x-ray, or wait till she had a bowel movement with them watching.
Oh, wow.
So said no to the first two, and then, well, she just would go to the bathroom.
That's intense.
It was, for sure.
So did they ever actually find anything?
Finally, after getting a court order, they did a rectal exam.
Okay.
And yeah, they found 88 balloons full of cocaine.
88 balloons. Wow. Okay, so she was definitely smuggling. But here's the question. Was detaining her that long, like forcing that kind of exam, was any of it even legal?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the Supreme Court had to grapple with.
Right.
The main issue was whether reasonable suspicion is enough to justify a detention that long and that intrusive, especially at the border. And here's where it gets tricky.
Oh, I bet.
We're not talking probable cause here, you know, the standard for arrests and searches.
Right.
This is about a lower bar, a suspicion that's reasonable, but maybe not like rock solid proof.
Okay, I see. So break this down for us. Reasonable suspicion versus probable cause at the border. Why the difference? What makes this such a gray area?
So the Supreme Court has always said that the government has a really, really strong interest in protecting its borders.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. But they have to balance that against the Fourth Amendment, the whole no unreasonable searches thing.
Right.
The court even used this phrase at its zenith when they talked about the government's interest in stopping smuggling at the border.
So they're basically saying national security is more important than individual rights when you're at the border.
Well, it's not quite that simple.
Okay.
There's nuance here, you know. They still need reasonable suspicion to hold someone longer than a normal check. In this case, the court decided that her travel history, her story not adding up, the cash, what she was wearing, and her refusing to cooperate, all that added up to reasonable suspicion.
Wait, hold on. They counted her refusal to cooperate against her.
Mm.
Isn't that like using her, exercising her rights against her?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That was a big point in debate. The court's argument was if she had just agreed to the x-ray or the bathroom thing, it wouldn't have taken 16 hours. They basically said her choices made the detention longer.
So they put some of the blame on her. That seems, I don't know, a bit of a slippery slope.
It does.
I bet that didn't sit well with everyone.
Yeah, you're right. Not everyone on the court agreed with this whole line of thinking.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into that. What do they have to say?
Well, Justice Stevens, he wrote one of the concurring opinions.
Okay.
His thing was that she first said yes to an x-ray, but then backed out, you know?
Right, right.
He thought that because she changed her mind, it gave them a reason to hold her longer.
Hmm. So even the justices who agreed with the decision, they didn't all agree on why it was okay.
Exactly. It was complicated.
So what about those who disagreed? What were their main concerns?
Justice Brennan. He wrote a really strong dissent, him and Justice Marshall. He really let them have it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, called the whole thing an authoritarian twilight zone.
Wow, that's pretty harsh.
Yeah, he didn't hold back. He said that for searches like that invasive, they should need probable cause just like anywhere else in the country.
Authoritarian twilight zone. That's strong language coming from a Supreme Court justice. He must have felt like her Fourth Amendment rights were totally ignored.
Yeah, he definitely did. His argument was that the government can't just hold someone in this weird in-between place where they can't enter the country, but they can't leave either without having solid evidence.
Right.
He was worried that if you let these kinds of detentions happen just based on reasonable suspicion, it would open the door to abuse and harassment, especially for certain types of travelers.
That's a scary thought, that this ruling could be used to unfairly target certain groups. And this was back in 1985. I can only imagine how much more relevant that is today. What with all the advancements in technology, surveillance of the borders, and everywhere else.
You're absolutely right. The Montoya de Hernandez case, it set a precedent that's still shaping how border searches are done. But as technology keeps changing,
right.
Think about all the body scanners, facial recognition, AI being used at airports and border crossings.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the questions this case raised are even more important now.
Yeah, imagine this case happening now. We have all these new tools that could probably confirm or rule out suspicions a lot faster, you know?
Yeah.
Would they still justify a 16-hour detention just based on reasonable suspicion, especially when there are less invasive options out there?
It's a huge question, and legal experts are debating it right now.
Hmm.
You know, maybe technology could lead to faster answers, which could mean shorter detentions.
Okay.
But these technologies could also lead to more people being flagged for secondary screening, maybe based on algorithms that aren't that accurate or biased data even.
Right, right.
So that could mean more innocent people going through these intrusive searches.
So it's a double-edged sword, right? Technology can make things more secure, but it can also chip away at our privacy and maybe even lead to discrimination.
Exactly.
It seems like how these tools are used, how accurate they are, and what protections are in place to prevent misuse, that's all super critical.
Couldn't agree more. It's not just about the technology itself. It's about the legal framework around it. We have to ask, does that reasonable suspicion standard still make sense given all these advancements? Do we need stricter rules on how long people can be detained, what searches are allowed, and how much evidence you need?
Right, yeah.
These are crucial questions that lawmakers and lawyers have to figure out.
It sounds like the Montoya de Hernandez case, even though it happened decades ago, is more relevant than ever. It really set the stage for a whole new wave of legal and ethical challenges now that we're in this age of high-tech border security.
I think you're right. And it's not just about border security either. This case is part of a bigger debate about privacy and surveillance in this whole digital age.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Think about it. If the government can justify invasive searches at the border based on reasonable suspicion, what's to stop them from applying that same logic to other parts of our lives?
Yeah.
Our online stuff, what we say to each other, where we go, all of it could be under scrutiny.
That's a little creepy, honestly. Makes you wonder where the line is between keeping people safe and invading their privacy. Do we need to rethink that whole balance of power, especially now that technology is giving the authorities all these ways to track us and analyze every little thing we do?
That's the question of our time, isn't it? And there are no easy answers.
Right.
We have to have this conversation, though, as a society.
Yeah, for sure.
We need careful thought, nuanced arguments, and a real commitment to sticking up for fundamental rights, even when we're worried about potential threats.
Yeah, it's a conversation we all need to be a part of. We can't just sit back and accept more and more surveillance and intrusion. We got to demand transparency, accountability, and challenge those in charge to find the right balance between security and liberty.
I'm with you there. It's not just about our own privacy either. It's about setting an example for the future. What kind of world are we creating for our kids?
Yeah.
One where security is the only thing that matters, or one where individual freedoms are valued and protected?
It's a choice we have to make together, and it has huge consequences.
It does.
The Montoya de Hernandez case, as uncomfortable and controversial as it is, really shows us what's at stake. So as we wrap up, I mean, this has been a complicated case, kind of unsettling, honestly.
Yeah.
What are some, I guess, key takeaways for our listeners, especially those in the legal field?
You know, one thing to remember is that this whole area of the law, border searches, it's constantly changing.
Right. Makes sense.
Technology is evolving like crazy.
Yeah.
The kinds of threats are changing. Even societal values are different. What people thought was reasonable back in 1985 when this case happened.
Right.
Might not be okay today, you know?
You're right. And haven't we seen some pushback already?
Yeah.
Like, I've heard about lawsuits against facial recognition at airports.
Yep.
And people are worried about the government looking at social media when you apply for a visa?
Exactly, that whole part of it. It shows that this whole conversation about border security versus individual rights, it's not over.
Not even conclusive, it sounds like.
And for us, as lawyers, we have to stay up to date on this stuff, right?
For sure.
Advocate for our clients' rights and make sure the law keeps up with the times. We have to be the ones asking, are the rules still relevant? Are they being applied fairly? What are the unintended consequences? That kind of thing.
Yeah, all good questions. It sounds like Montoya de Hernandez, even though it's an older case, is still super relevant for lawyers who work in immigration, criminal justice, maybe even tech and privacy.
Absolutely. It's a case every law student should know, every lawyer should be aware of. It gets to the core of some really big questions: the balance of power, the limits on what the government can do, and how important it is to protect individual liberties even when national security is on the line.
Heavy stuff. It really gets you thinking.
It does, and it shows us that even in a law that feels kind of crazy and unpredictable, the law is still there to protect our rights.
Yeah.
And make sure justice prevails. We can't let those basic principles skip away, especially now when technology is giving those in power more and more control.
It's a good reminder for sure. We got to stay aware, informed, and engaged. We can't just assume someone else is going to protect our rights for us. We have to actively defend them.
Well said. As we try to make sense of this world that just keeps getting more complex, cases like Montoya de Hernandez give us a guide, a way to think critically about these tough issues where security and liberty clash. And hopefully we can use that to build a future where we have both safety and freedom.
That's a great thought to leave us with. Thanks for being here today. I feel like I learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners did too. It's definitely a lot to chew on.
My pleasure. I always enjoy getting into these fascinating legal topics with you.
And to all our listeners out there, stay sharp, keep those legal minds running. We'll catch you next time on our next deep dive.